If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Welcome to Needle Exchange, conversations on the art of thread. This is the second part of my Needle Exchange with Vanessa Marr, artist, researcher and creator of the Domestic Dusters Project. In this part of our Needle Exchange, we dive into the challenges that people face when they are learning embroidery, including how gender and their past experiences shape their confidence with stitching. We explore how embroidery can be a tool for storytelling and activism, and Vanessa shares insights from her PhD research on the connection between textiles and invisible domestic labour. We also discuss the ongoing impact of the Domestic Dusters Project from international collaborations to the need for an official archive. If you've got a space and you like dusters, do get in touch. And we touch on Vanessa's cultural touch points, as is the way with this show. If you haven't listened to the previous episode, part one, be sure to go and check that out first. But I hope you enjoy this episode, and if you do enjoy it, a review on your favourite podcasting platform would be much appreciated. I'll be back next week with another conversation with somebody else from the needlework ecosystem. So until then, enjoy the show. Do you have reliable stitches? Like when you're teaching people, you know, it's easy for me with cross stitch because I go, you go like that with a thread, and you go like that with a thread, and you just repeat that. Whereas yours is more freeform. So are there, like, do you tend to just teach people running stitch, or do you go for a bit of split stitch, a bit of chain stitch? Do you have, like, reliable stitches for teaching people?
If they're really not confident, I'll go straight for, I'll go for running stitch. Back stitch is my personal favourite. And then, so that would be next. And then chain stitch, if people want to get a bit more complicated. And then obviously, but from chain stitch, looking at, you know, making it, using it to make flowers or decorative things if they feel that they want to. Probably don't go beyond that, to be honest. Sometimes people want to do satin stitch because they want to fill something in, but then they realize how long it takes. And dusters are quite big. So sometimes that happens. The very first ones I did, I stupidly filled in all my letters with satin stitch. I've since learnt that lesson, and I don't do that anymore. It's very definitely backstitch. I mean, I'm an illustrator and graphic designer previously, so I think for me that kind of single line drawing is something that I enjoy, that running stitch and backstitch particularly support. We don't do cross stitch because there's no obvious holes to make a cross stitch with. Sometimes people do. Somebody once did one and she just said, oh my gosh, you regretted it so much because it just was, you know, a lot of hard work to try and do that on a duster.
Yeah, I mean, unless you use one of those like soluble interfaces things, you got no hope of maintaining a secure grid or whatever. I mean, it's interesting, you very much, I mean, did the red thread, because you don't really encourage, I don't think you discourage anything, but I don't think you encourage things like applique or particular mixed media. You do go red thread hand embroidery, is that fair to say?
Red thread hand embroidery is absolutely at its core. I chose red thread because it matches the edges, but also there are feminine associations with it. Appliqué is fine. So sometimes people do that. There was a point at which I had some feedback where people said, actually, do you know what? The embroidery is putting me off, but I really would like to do this. And so I did, there was a phase where there was a bit more appliqué going on. That also leaked into collage. So I love stitching paper onto dusters to make collages. You have to be very careful with the stitching, obviously, so it doesn't tear. But there was a phase where that happened quite a lot, and that was quite accessible. So embroidery is what I keep coming back to because of that legacy. But I'm not anti appliqué or other things if that's what people want to use. There was one somebody did quite early on where she cut up a blue J cloth and stuck it onto the duster and said life's too short to embroider a duster. So that was quite interesting. J cloths actually look really nice on a duster as well. Someone's done an amazing one years right at the beginning, really early on, called Jackie Beatty, an illustrator, an academic friend of mine, and she did a PlayStation controller with the blue J cloth. And then embroidered around and sort of embellished around it. So, people can use other stuff, but, you've got to keep coming back to that stitch. That's the thing.
They're another funny textile, aren't they, J-cloths? Now that you mention them, I always just think of the smell of them. Like, they always, when it's time to get rid of a J-cloth because it's gone a bit funky smelling, isn't it?
Rubber gloves as well. I've cut up rubber gloves and stuck those onto dusters in an appliqué-type way. They really worked nicely to appliqué on to a duster. And I did embroider one once for a Cinderella theme. I embroidered "You shall go to the ball" on the back of a yellow rubber glove. It had to be yellow, obviously, with red thread, of course, which was challenging to stitch, but not because the rubber was hard to stitch, but because obviously the glove was already formed. So trying to get the needle into the hand bit in order to do that was quite challenging. I think that was at the point I was like, oh, is it duster? Is it going to be something else? Rubber gloves were there for a little while.
Is it? Yeah, there's a bit of a way. I bet you're blooming relieved upon reflection about that.
Yes.
I'm always quite relieved whenever I do a project that I do cross-stitch and I don't do like ironmongery as well. It's just like these things are really easy to transfer, aren't they? Because you said that, how many dusters do you think you've got kicking around then?
I need to do another count up, but over 800, probably getting on for 1,000.
And what opportunities do you get to display them? Have you done like the knitting and stitching show and stuff?
I did knitting and stitching show in 2023, Alexander Park and Alexander Palace and up at Harrogate. If I'm speaking about them academically, I'll take them to symposiums and display them there. So I've had them strung right across conference halls, which is great. I love doing that. Galleries, pop-up, do quite a lot of pop-up stuff. It's not unusual to walk into a room and immediately start scanning the architectural features to see if I can tie a washing line to it so that I can pick some dusters up. I did a collaboration with the Profanity Embroidery Group in Whitstable, mm-hmm. which was very funny and very rude. Mm-hmm. And we had them in a gin bar then, so they filled up that space. So all sorts of different spaces. But I generally would say, I mean, I work full time, so there's obviously only so much capacity that I have. But they probably get out probably about a dozen times a year, not in their entirety anymore. I do need a venue. If anyone's listening, I do need a venue to show them all. That would be amazing. But they tend to be in batches these days.
Yeah. I do need to, you just made me think, I do need to get the Profanity Embroidery Group on. That would be a heck of a conversation at some point ever. I was talking with someone the other day, I was talking with Kaz Holmes about whether I should do like after dark sessions, maybe set out like a membership version where people can pay to listen to these ones where we get a bit fruitier or something like that.
Yeah. Funny. Well, the dusters from them it was honestly, I have never had such a big response in such a short amount of time. So we sort of did a bit of a soft launch. And then we sort of got, and we were chatting about it before Christmas, and then Christmas happened, and then we were going to do the display in February. And so January, we got the proper call out, and I had 150. And it was the funniest thing because all of these dusters were coming through the front door. My husband was helping me record them all on a spreadsheet. So I'm standing there, and it was the weirdest situation. I'm standing there opening these envelopes, ironing these dusters, the irony of which not lost on me, or the pun. And reading out to him what the duster says so that he can log it for me. alongside the name and any notes from whatever they sent with me. And yeah, the air was pretty blue. And people just really, really enjoyed being able to be rude on a duster and swear about, you know, how they felt about doing the washing up or whatever. Yeah, they were good. That was good fun.
It also reminds me of times like, so there's, with projects like this, there's two times when you just, at the start, when you haven't had a piece and yes, you're just sitting there waiting and you're like, oh, this could really all fall apart. You have to just know that it'll come, don't you? And then towards the end, when there's a deadline and you're getting so much post, you have to say to the postman that you're not a drug dealer or something, because, you know, these padded envelopes coming through, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the very first exhibition, a friend of mine offered me her studio. And about a week before, I had like 25. And I thought, oh, you know, that's pretty good. You know, the project didn't exist at that point. It was entirely out of my own head. And I thought, I'll put some blank ones up, you know, in between. It'll be all right. And then literally the week before, I think we ended up with 75 or something in the space of the week. And I'd come home, me yet another pile of dusters. And even now I've got three soft packets sitting on my kitchen island that I need to log and get ready to go out. It is lovely. I come home to a squishy parcel and I'm like, oh, I know what that is. That's good.
Do you have an online exhibition of them? Like, are you cataloguing them?
I need to do that. I am cataloguing them. I haven't been brilliant at it, I have to admit. But yeah, I'm actually applying for some funding at the moment to do it properly, so it can become a bit of an accessible archive. So, I, you know, I photograph them and put them on the blog or put them up on Instagram, but I haven't got an online sort of resource where they're all there. And that would be really good. So that's definitely on the list of things to do.
Do you have a lot of letters? Well, I would always get letters from people. And I always felt like I did a project, Stitch Your Story project, which was for the British Textile Biennial, and people had to do something that illustrated about where they came from. And there were a lot of stories.
Oh,
and
we, I did it.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, yeah,
yes,
yeah.
Did, yeah.
So we put the stories on the back there, but I always felt like it was almost like you wanted to do a book of those, you know, because you've got these little projects, just some kind of actual record of it rather than the stitched things or whatever. I don't know whether you feel the same inclination.
I have kept every single thing that anyone's ever sent me with their duster. So I have, you know, in this huge chest of drawers that is full of dusters, I also have a drawer that is filled with all of these letters because, yeah, it feels important to keep them. It really does. And it's like, you know, like I said earlier, sometimes what they stitch and then what they... at the Dutch duster actually shows, they sort of need each other. Sometimes I ask people to write, you know, 50 words about why they stitch their duster. So if I do a collaboration now, I'm quite good at making sure that that's happened. But it's been such an evolving thing. You know, I never thought it would become what it was. That wasn't my aim. I just had this sort of desire to do it. And then from the first exhibition, someone said, oh, well, can you bring them here and can you bring them there? And I thought, oh, okay, let's see where this goes. If I went back and did it now, I'd have, you know, a definitive archive and all of these things. But, you know, it's fine. It works. And the dusters are all safe. They are all very safe. You know, I've not lost one.
Yeah. In case anybody's wondering. I mean, Diana Waymar would say the same thing, you know, about just, you know, she just stitched something. I am a very, very stable genius one time. And I mean, unfortunately now her project's gaining more momentum again, but sometimes these things do, don't they? They just catch wind and all of a sudden you're a custodian of a thing rather than a like direct producer of it or something.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a library in New York who got in touch with me a few weeks ago, and their curator there is doing a collaboration with a high school girl from high school, and they said, oh, can we do a call out? And so there's call out there now, which is fabulous. Unfortunately, I won't get to go because there is no funding for anything like that. But based on what's happening in America at the moment, that feels really exciting. And I've had people already, I only posted it last night, have people get in touch and say, oh, it's local to me. That's brilliant. I can't wait to do it. And then I look at their profile and I can see what they're doing. Someone who got in touch had been doing some stitching about banned books. The Handmaid's Tale, madly, is banned amongst other brilliant books. And so... yeah, I hope that it sort of finds its space in some of the conversations that need to be happening at the moment as well.
So you started the project and you've had these different variations of it. Do you, like when you think about what comes next, do you kind of wait for people to get in touch with you, or do you have ideas forming? Are there gaps in the academic research, for instance, that are appearing that you think you'd like to pursue with this project?
To begin with, it's always been very responsive. So if there's an opportunity come up, I will grab it. I went for a phase, a couple of sort of 2 or 3 years in, of being a bit more strategic and sort of pushing it out there, and that reaped some rewards. Taking it on to Instagram in lockdown had a huge and really positive impact. More recently, so in sort of the last maybe 3 or 4 years, I've thought about it more strategically in terms of my academic career, and that's led to funded community-based, community partner projects. With them, I actually had a conversation just before I chatted with you now about doing some work with an organisation that support women who've experienced domestic violence. I would like to do more in that area. I'd like to do the archive. I'm trying desperately to finish a PhD on the Dusters at the moment. So to a certain extent, things are a little bit paused from that. I would definitely like to do more around motherhood. I've done a bit on motherhood. So I took the Dusters to the Museum of Motherhood in Florida early last year. But although it's kind of implicit in a lot of the content, it's not something I've necessarily explicitly called out for or placed it in that space. So I'd like to do some more around that, I think.
And I want to call you Dr. Duster now, because you're going to have a...
when I get my PhD,
exactly. Be good. You'll be like Dr. Duster. Has to have a cape or a superhero cost. Like Doctor Strange, and he touches...
The supervisor keeps suggesting that I do something like that. I have a duster cape when I graduate. I don't think I've got the nerve.
I mean, I see. You brought that big one to the art space the other week or whatever. Like, you're capable of large dusters. I think that's...
I am, yes.
And I've never done... I thought it'd be cool to do a PhD somewhere down the line so that I could be called Dr. X. But have you got a thesis then? I wonder what the end point of your PhD, whether you have to summarise and come out with a grand conclusion. And I wonder whether you already know what the grand conclusion is.
Yeah, the thesis is around enacting and enticing domestic narratives on a duster through what I call drawing with thread in that particular theory. So I don't actually call it embroidery, because that releases me from this idea of it being purely embellishment. Drawing with thread enables me to use it as sort of an expressive mean. There's some theory around drawing and phenomenology, which talks about drawing as a means of embodying experience. So I connect to that, and also a theory called autoethnography, which is telling stories with the intention of enticing change in some way. So that holds the space for me really nicely in terms of stitching in that legacy of women, acknowledging the legacy of embroidery, but also allowing it to become the embodiment of experience, and then framing it within a theory that is change making. So that's what the PhD is about. It's practice based, which means I've probably written about 100,000 words, but ultimately the thesis will be around 50,000. And then there's also a whole load of work that I've done for that, specifically for the PhD, which includes lots of things like words that I've stitched, stories that I've stitched, images that recollect particular experiences, because it's autoethnographic. It's looking at me and my domestic experience as opposed to be outward facing like the project is. And then I've also done a piece of work for the PhD, which has been really interesting, where I stitched together 3 dusters and put them on my kitchen island, on the space where I serve up dinner, so the space that gets really mucky, and asked my family to draw around every single thing that they put on that space for a week. It didn't get mucky. It was the cleanest thing in the world. It was like a guest, but it had all these wonderful drawings on it with this, you know, this dissolvable pen that I use. And so I stitched over those, and then I cut it up, and then I stitched into the positive space and the negative space and remade it and kind of reworked the duster as a way of revisiting that space and the kind of family life that happens around it, ultimately creating these tiny little fragments of duster that are cut from the duster that were on the space that I wind around my fingertips, and they look a bit like thimbles, but I call them fingertips, and they take one length of thread, which I measure from the heel of my hand to my elbow. So a measure of my body that's performing the tasks. And I use one length of thread to stitch that and secure it to my finger. So I've got them in a kilner jar. So that's ultimately what that's ended up being, this kind of drawn embodiment on Duster with red thread that holds all of those actions that I've undertaken in that space and a reflection of all of that.
Wow, that's cool, man. I really like the idea with the mapping. It's making me think of Liz Konecki and how she gets people to draw like maps off or stitch onto maps of geographic locations. But I like the fact that this is a super focused time and motion study of an area or something. That's really, it's a fascinating infographic when you stop and look at it.
It is, absolutely. It is quite infographic-y. I suppose my graphic design bits come back in, you know, I think I'm not anymore and that they come back in anyway. But I'm basically sort of, I'm editing at the moment. So the end is in sight, but there will be an exhibition, these dusters, and the mapping is really interesting. You sort of look at it and don't know what it is, and then I also get really excited when I'm talking about it. But it is this map of family life, and it's been really interesting to kind of approach it in quite an artistic way as well, you know, working back into it, I did positive and negative space back at school, you know, when you learn how to draw a chair. And it's been quite interesting to sort of think, okay, well, what if I apply that theory to it? What can I learn through that? Something else that I did when I was leading up to doing the fingerprints is I was stitching duster I did called Mediating the Materiality of the Duster when I first started to explore drawing as embroidery as drawing, whichever way around you look at it. And I set myself these rules that I had to stitch or touch this duster every day for a month. And I had to do it at home, so I couldn't take it on the train with me or whatever like I normally do. And there were these periods of really intense stitching and others that were more confined. Sometimes I literally just picked it up and put it back down again. But what I actually did was freeform running stitch.
Right.
And that allowed me to really think while stitching and embody that kind of experience of domesticity in a kind of more conceptual way. And so when I worked with the Kitchen Island dusters, I started doing that into the things that I was cutting up. And that was a way of thinking about it. And then I realized I'm moving my hands around the hoop all of the time. And I thought, well, this, you know, I'm connecting hands. It's my hands, my family's hands, my hands revisiting it. So I started to stitch around them. And then I started to stitch them in where they hadn't been. And then that was what led me to then ultimately making these little fingerprints.
Mm. And then as someone who is obviously victim of the subject that you are exploring.
Yeah.
How has this project changed your perspective? Like, has it changed the way you think about yourself? Have you gone through a process out the back of this? Are you more annoyed about the circumstance or at peace with it? Or
there's a great solidarity that comes, you know, from realizing, yeah, you're not the only one. But I think, you know, that invisible labour is there. You know that women's lives are hidden and ignored and pushed to one side. But I just keep discovering more and more of it. So I think I just get, yeah, probably more annoyed. But also feel more powerful.
Yeah.
So annoyed and powerful. That's a dangerous combination, particularly for a woman.
Get to stitch truth to power, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Sorry about men. Just put that out there. I'm not really responsible for many of them. Let's, now that we've covered those weighty tombs, let's go on to the other tranche of inquiry in that case then. And I sort of already know the answer to the first question, but do you have a favourite album or a favourite band?
Well, as I mentioned before, I'm actually really rubbish at this because I find I spend so much time thinking or talking or listening as a lecturer that actually I really like peace and quiet.
Yeah.
So I'm very sad and boring on that level. And I was struggling and I was thinking, what is it? I don't know. My music taste is atrocious. I never know what to listen to. I never know what I like. A song will come on and I like it. And that's about as good as I get. I took my daughter to Taylor Swift last year. Does that count? That was fun.
I mean, that's a pretty cool mum thing to say. You probably weaned yourself just there, to be honest. So
that was fun.
Do you like the sounds of nature?
No, I like peace and quiet. I live 5 minutes from the beach.
Okay.
And my favourite thing to relax is to take the dog down to the beach and to be on my own. And so, yeah, I probably do like sounds of nature, but when I'm literally in nature, not to bring that sound to me.
Yeah, that sound. Okay, do you have a favourite book?
Oh, gosh, yes, lots of favourite books. Handmaiden's Tale, which I mentioned before. I love that. I love books about women, about powerful women. There's a book I read recently. I can't pronounce the name of the author, so I'm not going to attempt to because I will get it wrong, but it's called The Ghost in the Throat. And that was, she writes about a female text the whole way through it, which obviously I loved. Lots and, yeah, I would say though at the moment, they were probably my two favourite books.
Yeah.
But I have a ridiculous amount of books and I genuinely have read most of them. I have a teetering pile by my bed. My family are like, we're not buying any more books, Mum. Just have, ask for something else for Christmas.
Yeah, and we're not buying any more dusters, Mum. These collections are growing, Mum, please.
Yeah, exactly. I need to make a duster book. That's the thing that I need to do next as well. And to going back to the early question about what my ambitions are, a duster book is definitely something that needs to come once I finish writing the PhD.
Yeah. I mean, you could make it out of the dusters. You could literally turn it into a textile art.
Oh, I've done that. Right. I've done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a quick thing. Do you have a favourite film / TV show? Do you watch much telly? Probably not, by the sounds of it.
No, I do like a good box set. I'm currently watching Severance.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good. Favourite film? I really like Science of Sleep, and I made a whole piece of duster work in response to that.
Okay.
So that's by Michel Gondry. It's one of a slightly weird French film. Basically, there's a girl and a boy who live in an apartment building and they fall in love, and she is a maker and he has these dreams. And you know when he's dreaming because the set changes to be cardboard and cellophane.
Right.
And ultimately, these two things merge. And they gallop away on a horse that she sewed. So bonkers film. But I did a remote photo shoot in lockdown and made my kitchen island into, which actually inspired the work I then did with the kitchen island for the PhD, made my kitchen into that space. So, you know, there was dusters coming out of the taps and the whole of the island swathed in dusters. And my daughter, who was like my youngest daughter, who was 12 at the time, was really game. And she helped me make a yellow duster cake. And then we mixed dusters, actual dusters, in the, you know, in the cake mixer and made muffins out of dusters. So that led to a whole load of sort of playful things. I'm a bit obsessed, aren't I, really?
I mean, it does just make me think about, like, I know, you know, my sister-in-law really likes colour orange, so everyone gets orange things. Like, it's one of those where you just, I mean, if you've got family members who are just like, okay, Vanessa.
Probably. I had already painted my kitchen dust yellow as well, entirely unconsciously, which helped with that particular set. Yeah, probably. I sort of sometimes consciously don't say anything about them now because I think people must be bored with me talking about it all the time. It's like, yeah, let's not mention the dusters. She'll be off on one.
And then is there an interesting fact that not a lot of people know about you other than that you really like dusters?
Other than I really like dusters. Yeah, struggling with this one. I think probably people know most things.
I thought it was interesting you said you were an illustrator and a graphic designer in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was, yeah, probably that's maybe something that people don't know so much.
Hmm.
I used to work as an art editor for Dorling Kindersley.
Right.
And then my husband and I ran a design agency for about 10 years where we did lots of work with not-for-profit and charitable organisations, which is, again, probably led me into some of the reasons why I like doing the Duster Project. And that was how I initially started. It got into academia. So I run a course called Design for Digital Media. I've taught sort of graphic design, illustration type things. But as my research has evolved, that's kind of gone another route as well.
Hmm.
Also, you know, I've got a couple of academic leadership roles at Brighton. So there's lots of things that I do that are quite sort of managey, really, as opposed to stitching. But I do stitch in meetings.
Excellent.
I bring it back in.
You're a lady of many layers, but those layers were all made of duster. Do you actually do much dusting?
You know, obviously, that's not something that not many people know because everyone knows I love my dog. But people might not know that through my social media.
I was going to ask you actually whether do you actually do much dusting? I can't decide on dusting at home. I feel like
no,
I need it.
No, and not with dusters either. They're only for embroidery. I've ruined a few things by putting those dusters in the wash, so I don't dust with those dusters.
He's a J-cloth. Who needs J-cloth, eh?
Exactly.
Hey, Vanessa, thanks for having a needle exchange for me.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Happy days, happy days.
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's needle.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needleexchange. See you next time.